Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Edgy talk, plain talk,
unrivaled talk. Mike Graham,
the only radio show you can count on for a proper serving of good old-fashioned common sense. In search of the perfect debate.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
Nationwide, by your side, talk radio and talk TV.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk TV. It's Monday morning. It's been a pretty fractious weekend one way and another. Firebomb attack on migrants is the front page of the Times this morning. Petrol bomber attacks migrant centre, front page of the Daily Mail. Three devices thrown. They've actually got a picture of the guy throwing it out of his car. Extraordinary picture, actually, of a man wearing a checked shirt. His face is slightly pixelated, throwing a petrol bomb out of his car window as he drives past this particular migrant processing centre in Dover. A couple of people were injured. Surely it's not the point. The point about this incident is that somebody has decided that that was what he was going to do. We don't know what the circumstances are of this gentleman's situation. He later committed suicide at a petrol station, so it would appear that probably his mental health was not all that it should have been. But we're hearing more and more stories now of a system which is not only broken, but is creaking and is in danger of exploding into our entire everyday life. People who don't know about the migrant crisis, who have suddenly woken up to it, are absolutely aghast that so many people are coming to this country, seemingly with the wish to stay here for the rest of time. I spoke to a lawyer about all of this on Friday, a man who pretty much summed up what's wrong with the way that this situation is being treated. He basically said, well, everybody is entitled to come and live here. Well, they're not, I'm afraid. And now people are hiding behind the law saying, oh, but it's not illegal to come here as an asylum seeker. Well, yes, it is, actually. 0344 499 1000. We're going to talk to the chairman of Brexit Watch, former MEP Ben Habib, this morning. The pressure cooker of Britain is literally rising and rising and rising. There's going to be trouble after more trouble after more trouble. 1,900 migrants arrived on our shores this weekend alone, raising it to something like 40,000. There's no way it's going to be below 50,000 by the end of the year. If you're getting 2,000 every weekend, you just figure it out. That's at least another 20,000 before the end of the year just from the weekends alone. I mean, this can't go on. The government needs to get a grip. I put out a tweet last night that said, now a deadly toll has been taken because of the migrant crisis. People have died in the past because they've died in the channel trying to get here. We've now got a guy who's committed suicide as a result of whatever frustrations he was feeling. I don't know why he did it. Nobody probably will ever know why he did it. But we have now surely reached a point at which the government has to stop talking about doing something and actually do something. 0344 499 1000. Meanwhile, there's a plan apparently afoot in the Home Office to mix migrants with other people in hotels. As opposed to taking over hotels completely, which is what they've been doing up to now, they fear that they might need to do more, but instead of stopping them coming, they're finding new ways to house them. I mean, really? Is this really the point? 0344 499 1000. We've got lots more going on today as well. We're going to talk about the police and crime. Peter Hitchens is here. The clocks have changed, so he'll have something to say about that. Plus, the levels of crime. The police are now saying, it's not that crime is going up, it's just that we're recording more of it and it's not really crime. And so when you see that we are not solving any crimes, that's not really a true picture because actually it's much safer now than it was 20 years ago. Oh yeah? And I've got some swampland in Florida to sell you as well. Lots more going on. We want to hear from you, of course, because we need to hear your stories. 0344 499 1000. Something has to be done. Let's get it done. Let's do it. This is Talk TV. Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham, the only place to be to get some common sense, to get some real proper ideas. We've been talking about this problem for a very long time here at Talk TV. We were talking about it when we were Talk Radio. You know, we've been talking about it really ever since Brexit, because one of the reasons people wanted to leave the European Union was to get better control of our own borders, so that we didn't have to allow people from any part of the European Union to just come and live here, come and work here, come and take a house here, because they felt like it. And the whole point of having a border is that you control who comes across it, isn't it? I mean, call me old-fashioned. Ben Habib is here, chairman of Brexit Watch, former MEP, of course. Ben, a very good morning to you.
Morning, Mike.
I mean, I don't know where to begin, really. You and I have had this conversation so many times. Surely to God, we are now at a point where the government has to stop talking about doing something and actually doing something.
Well, I mean, you said it really in your last sentence, Mike, before you brought me on, which was that, you know, we've got to take control of our borders. Mm. And our government seems to conflate a number of different issues. It thinks a deportation plan for Rwanda is the same as border control. It thinks that doing a bilateral agreement with France over the control of smuggling is border control. No, that's not border control. Let's be clear, border control is the physical protection of British borders at the point of entry into our territorial waters. And that control has to be exercised unilaterally by the British government. And that is where we are failing, and where successive governments and successive Home Secretaries have simply not got the point. They seem to hang their hat on an international convention, a UN convention, that states that, you know, our border force and our navy would be obliged to rescue anyone at sea, so we can't take any robust physical action at the border.
Yeah.
But that's an absurdity, because you can't apply that convention to people who are literally trying to enter your country illegally. Mm. It's like saying to people who land at Heathrow, well, if you haven't got the requisite papers, just jump over the barriers. Yeah. And we won't tackle you because we might endanger your physical being.
Yes.
That's utter rubbish. If these people are coming into our country illegally, seeking entry illegally, then we have to challenge them physically at the point of entry, which is the border. And if necessary, Parliament should pass a law. I don't think a law is required, by the way. It's just a UN convention. But if necessary, Parliament should pass a law derogating away from that UN convention insofar as it applies to people illegally trying to enter the country.
Well, the thing,
the
thing that's also incredible, right, and I discovered this, and I guess we sort of knew it anyway at the weekend, I interviewed this immigration lawyer on Friday who basically revealed that, you know, it was everybody's right to come to this country, and if this country tried to stop them, then it was also their right to get legal aid to fight the government to stay here. And that's the situation. So if you do actually get refused entry at some point, and normally it takes about 8 years before they actually decide to process your application and tell you that you're not fit to stay here, they then get legal aid, paid for by you and I, to fight the decision. It's incredible.
It's incredible. And that's why, you know, deportation is nowhere near as good as border control. And they shouldn't be mixed up. They shouldn't be confused. They are two very distinct, different things.
Yeah.
And, you know, lawyers like the one you interviewed, of course, have a massive vested interest in a protracted legal battle once these people get here, because he makes fees out of it. And let's not forget that plane that failed to take off for Rwanda with its one passenger was actually unboarded or deboarded, whatever the correct expression is, mostly by the British judicial system. It was only the European Convention, the European Court of Human Rights, that came in for that last one person who was on the plane and grounded the plane. No, we mustn't seek to deal with these people coming across the channel illegally through a deportation program. We've got to get physical at the border. I know that sounds uncompassionate, but that's what border control is. If people charge your borders, you have a right as a country to take physical action. I mean, actually, you know, Heathrow, just going back to that example, the quickest way to get a gun pointed in your face is to run at the barriers.
Yeah.
So why is it any different at sea?
Right. Absolutely right. And what about these people, right, who say, oh, but, you know, these are desperate people coming, even if they now accept that there's, you know, 10% of them are Albanian. You know, there's an awful lot of them that are Albanian. According to Home Office figures, it could be as high as 80%. An awful lot of the people that we see coming off the dinghies physically look as if they could be Albanian people, you know, because it's very clear they're not coming from Africa. Yeah. It's very clear they're not coming from Afghanistan or indeed Syria.
But Mike, I wouldn't even go so far as to try and judge whether they're worthy of asylum or not. They are, at that point, seeking to enter the United Kingdom illegally. Mm. Whether they have a legitimate claim to asylum is a separate and different issue. And, you know, often the debate is undermined by citing the possibility that they might have asylum and therefore jumping to the conclusion that they have a right to enter the country illegally. No, that's not right. Mm. Even if they have a legitimate claim to asylum, that does not give them the right to enter the United Kingdom illegally.
Right.
Now, remember, they're coming from France. They're not coming from a war-torn region. Mm. I know France may not be to the liking of many, many people. It's not a place I would readily holiday. But they've got absolutely no justification to say that they're fleeing any hardship in France. They need to stay in France. We need to pass the Nationality and Borders Bill did make it more difficult. Act now, it's been passed into Act. Did make it more difficult for people having come through safe countries to get to the UK, but there were exceptions. We need to toughen that up. We need to make it entirely illegal, and we need to enforce our borders. The Royal Navy and Border Force need to be told to do their job.
Mm. And more hotels are being commandeered, right? But we hear this morning that there's another mad plan afoot. Front page of the Daily Telegraph: migrants side by side in hotels with the public. Home Office officials are drawing up proposals for spot bookings of rooms rather than reserving entire hotels. I mean, this is even more mad than what they're doing already.
It's absurd. And it's already costing us £2 billion a year to house the migrants we've already got. And that bill is only going up, Mike, because none of these people are leaving the UK once they get here.
No.
£2 billion a year. Now, you put that into the context of the cost of living crisis. And, you know, it's a massive figure. And the drawback again with this is that once you've got people staying in hotels or rented accommodation and so on, you're creating more vested interest wishing to keep these people here. Landlords are now over the moon because they can sign their otherwise defunct properties up for long leases to the government to house these migrants.
Right.
So they're benefiting. The whole system is breaking down.
But it's broken, you know, down, hasn't it? I don't think it's breaking down.
Yeah, it's not breaking down. It's broken. The system's broken. Mm. We need to get a grip.
Yeah. I mean, could we not take legal aid away from these kinds of applications? And therefore, if they knew they couldn't fight and they knew they once were deported, they had to go, even though that system's not perfect. At least they... Because, I mean, you can see the conversations that people have with them where they say, don't worry, it'll take about 8 years before they process you. And if you don't manage to get the OK to stay, we'll just have a lawsuit, which you won't have to pay any money towards, where we can sue the government and you might even win some money.
Well, I mean, the whole point was of having a 80-seat majority, you know, that Boris won on a promise to enforce our borders was that he would use it to enforce our borders.
Right.
You know, that was one of the central promises made by Boris Johnson. Mm. And he didn't do it. Priti Patel failed to do it. Suella Braverman, I hope, will do it, though she's got her own spot of bother at the moment, which is, I think, slightly nobbling her. But, you know, we've just got to get a grip. We suffer such an absence of political will in Westminster. It doesn't apply just to, these people crossing the channel illegally. We have a complete collapse in political will at Westminster to protect the fabric of our country, to stand up for British rights, to stand up against people who want to rip our statues down, people who want to rip our heritage apart. You know, there's a complete lack of will in Westminster, effectively, to stand up for the United Kingdom.
Well, also,
and I don't know where this goes.
I know, because they won't stand up to the civil service. They won't stand up to the lefty lawyers. They won't stand up to the lobbying groups who are lobbying on behalf of these illegal migrants. It's extraordinary. But stay where you are, Ben. We've got more to do, more to talk about. 0344 499 1000. Loads of you want to talk to me today. I'm not surprised. People are sick to the back teeth of this ludicrous situation. It needs to stop, and it needs to stop now. This is Talk TV.
Online, on DAB+, Talk Radio and Talk TV.
Welcome back to the home of Common Sense. It is, of course, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk TV. Lots of people sending in some very interesting tweets about what's going on in various points around the country, particularly when it comes to hotels. Already, some of you reporting in that many hotels that you've stayed in have already got floors reserved, which would appear to be floors reserved for people who are being put there by the Home Office, complete with security guards as well. A lot of you asking why legal aid cannot be taken away. Boris has a bit of cake. Outrage from Labour and the lefty media. 40,000 mainly young men invade the country. Not a peep, says Paul. Well, it's very interesting, isn't it? On the third front page of The Guardian, ministers accused of Wild West attitude to UK's national security. They get very worried about Liz Truss's phone being hacked. They get very worried about Suella Braverman sending an email. But they don't get very worried about 40,000 people coming to the country illegally. Quite extraordinary. Incredible hypocrisy. Ben Habib is with us, chairman of Brexit Watch. Ben, I mean, I think that's also the problem, isn't it? And many have said, and in fact the piece by Natalie Elphick at the weekend in the Mail on Sunday pointed this out, that there is this kind of wave of horror anytime anybody mentions the idea that that illegal migrants might not be a great idea for this country.
Well, I don't know what it is. It's perhaps, you know, I'm hesitant to say, but perhaps it's just a complete breakdown in a belief that our nation's interests should be put first. It seems to me that the Labour Party and a large swathe of the Tory Party simply don't believe in promoting the national interest, that they've got some kind of screwed up idea of what is for the greater good from a global perspective, and our national interest needs to be subsidiary to that. I mean, I simply can't explain it. You know, these people have been elected to look after our interests, and they trash them on a regular and frequent basis. And yeah, as I mentioned before the break, you know, it doesn't apply just to people illegally crossing the channel. It applies, you know, right across the board to a whole host of really critical national issues.
Absolutely right. Well, let's have a look at some of the things that happened over the weekend, because obviously there was this bizarre attack on one of the detention centres in Dover, where a guy chucks three petrol bombs out of a window. Clearly, not all there. He later committed suicide. But on Sunday afternoon, it's reported that at Manston, which is the Home Office's processing centre, something like a dozen to 15 coaches arrived, full of migrants, to be put into this place where we've already had it described as a sort of hellhole, where 4,000 odd people are being held, which is only designed to hold 1,000. We're hearing this morning that the army might be called in to build a proper detention centre for them. I mean, there just doesn't seem to be any recognition that you can't just keep building places for people to go. You have to stop them from coming.
You've got to stop them from coming. It's the only treatment that's going to resolve the problem. And we're going to see much more of this, aren't we, Mike? We're going to see more violence. We're going to see more outbreaks of diphtheria, I think is what they had at Manston. And we're going to see more of that as this problem gets bigger and bigger. Mm. And remember, Rishi Sunak is about to embark on some serious austerity. And that's going to be applied, presumably, to these people crossing the channel as well. Yeah. You know, we're going to have to cut back on all the massive benefits that they get. And the problem's going to get worse. And if we don't cut back on those benefits that they get, actually, our own people are going to get pissed off. And you might, sorry, forgive the language, but, you know, you might see more people attacking these, you know, centres where migrants are, these people who've crossed the channel.
Yeah, people are getting more and more fed up. I mean, we've taken calls from people saying we're thinking of going down to the beaches and to stand there to defend the country and all this. You know, people are at breaking point as well. And the point is that, you know, despite everything, those who are in favour of this, for which I don't understand why, have changed the argument. You know, it used to be that, oh, I don't know what you make such a big fuss about, you gammon. There's hardly any of them coming. It's a very small number. You know, France takes many more than us. They've lost that argument. So then you're a racist for a while. Now that some of the people that are coming would appear to be white rather than brown, they can't say we're racist anymore. Now they're saying, oh, but now they are protected by international law. Of course they're allowed to come here. You know, anything but to actually admit that there's a problem. Anything to say that, you know, there's an entire sort of new town of 40,000 people now living in this country, and it's not sustainable.
No, it is absurd. And I think I mentioned to you before, you know, I have friends who are very well educated who think the United Kingdom have has brought it upon itself because of its imperial past, that it should now be invaded this way. Yeah. And of course, it's a complete ridiculous statement to make. Mm. You know, anyway, I'm very proud of our imperial past, by the way. I just want to get that on the record.
Yes.
You know, I'm sick of people attacking our imperial past.
Right.
The United Kingdom had a fantastic empire, and it exported law and order, justice, education, infrastructure. It was fantastic. So I'm sick of people attacking
and
it
also
and blaming
when, and
this
also
problem
when,
on that.
When those countries decided that they wanted to be independent of the British Empire, that happened. It wasn't as if the British
Empire...
And they
were given a helping hand, and the Commonwealth was set up, and they were welcomed back, and there's a fraternity.
Yeah.
And there's nothing like that with the French Empire or the little empire that Germany had or tried to have. You know, we were a force for good in the world. We were the first to abolish slavery. We did so much for the world in terms of human rights and so on. And it is absurd to think that we should now have an open border policy because of what we, you know, our history. Utterly ridiculous. Now, the problem here is, as I said, you know, breakdown in political will, a complete absence of a desire to get to grips with the problem. When we see it with Just Stop Oil, don't we, Mike? You know, people gluing themselves to the road, people trashing national art, graffiting and vandalizing Rolex shops and other, you know, perfectly legitimate businesses on the high street, and the police standing by and watching and doing nothing about it. I mean, I can't imagine what I would do if one of these Just Stop Oil people glued themselves to the road in front of my car.
Yeah.
I mean,
I've already worked out what I'm going to do. I'm going to go to the nearest Sainsbury's while I'm waiting, get some soup and just pour it over their head, because presumably that's okay. Because apparently it's not an offence if you do that.
No, but you know, it's just absurd, isn't it? Why are the police protecting the Just Stop Oil people and moving motorists away, who just seeking to move these Just Stop Oil people so they can actually get to their work, drop their children at school? Who the hell are these Just Stop Oil people that they have the right to sit in our roads and block legitimate travel?
Yeah.
And why aren't the police tackling it? This is another symptom of a breakdown of our institutions, our inability, a lack of political will to get to grips with the problem. It's sickening.
Yes.
It's really sickening.
Absolutely
the country's
right.
going to pot. I'm sort of ranting now, Mike.
No,
but,
listen,
you know,
but that's how everybody feels. And I mean, you're one of the more sane individuals that I know, Ben, and you're at your wit's end. I don't blame you. How about this? We've got loads of these coming in. I stayed at the Premier Inn Manchester Arena only last week. The top six floors are closed off to customers because they are full of migrants. I paid £102 a night. What do they pay? You feel you're being weighed up when walking in or out of the hotel. I mean, you know, people are going to get really annoyed with this. They can't sustain it. It's ridiculous.
This government needs to get a grip.
Yeah, they really do. Ben, good to talk to you. Thanks very much indeed. Chairman of Brexit Watch, former MEP Ben Habib, even he's getting worked up about this. Tell us what you're seeing out there. Tell us about the hotels near you, because we need to know precisely how bad this problem is and what the Home Office are doing about it. They're trying to keep it all a secret. I'm not having it. This is Talk TV.
Made the announcement as it's been revealed that the death toll has now risen to more than 140. The footbridge in Gujarat collapsed as people celebrated the Diwali festival, leading to overcrowding. The former president of Brazil has been voted back into power after Lula da Silva beat far-right leader Jair Bolsonaro in the country's presidential election. His supporters celebrated after the left-wing former president won 50.9% of the vote. Bolsonaro has not yet conceded, prompting concerns over more political violence. And explosions have been heard in Kyiv this morning as Russia continues to target Ukraine's capital city. Attacks on civilian infrastructure have stepped up in recent weeks after Russia lost ground. Well, that's all for now. We'll have more in half an hour.
The home of common sense. Talk Radio and Talk TV.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk TV. You know what to do. 0344 499 1000 is the number. Getting an awful lot of tweets from people saying that they've been in various hotels up and down the country. And of course, what they've seen is that there are certain floors somehow blocked out so that they can't stay in them. But if you're paying for a hotel room and you suddenly find that an awful lot of people staying in the hotel aren't paying for a hotel room, it's not going to make you very happy, is it? I mean, that's the problem. If you're trying to get a house and it turns out that people are being given houses because they've come here illegally and they somehow have to be given a house, that is not what Britain is all about. absolutely ridiculous situation. 0344 499 1000. And we've seen that Britain is now creaking at the very seams. You know, these detention centres are overrun. They're badly run. The Home Office isn't fit for purpose. And so now, I'm saying, the government has to do something about it. They can no longer stand by and say, we're going to do something about it. No, they actually have to do something. There is, I believe, an urgent question in the House of Commons. We think this afternoon we'll bring that to you right here, of course, as soon as we can. But right now, let's talk to Lucy Fisher, Defence Editor at The Times, because a couple of big stories at the weekend are involving Russia. One, Liz Truss's phone was apparently hacked. And two, we've of course got the other situation going on where there may have been other infiltrations of Russian intelligence finding out all about what is going on in this country's government.
Well, I think there are a lot of security concerns about how Russian agents were able to access the Prime Minister's messages. But it seems that it was via WhatsApp, which is obviously a privately owned app which can be downloaded onto government phones. There have been quite a lot of security issues over it previously, including over it's thought that Mohammed bin Salman, the Saudi crown prince, had a role in sending a message that allowed spyware to be downloaded to the phone of Jeff Bezos, the Amazon founder previously. That then led to security concerns about Boris Johnson messaging the Saudi crown prince over WhatsApp. Fast forward a few years, there was also the scandal involving an Israeli spyware firm being accused of hacking activists' phones, again via security weaknesses in WhatsApp. So I think there are growing concerns now about WhatsApp being used, particularly by ministers. But it is obviously a widely used app. It's almost universal. Most people in Westminster use it. So it would be a huge reduction in convenience if ministers or even MPs were advised against using it.
Right. But it must be some kind of massive operation now to kind of, they've said to various MPs that they shouldn't use their mobile phones. Ministers have been told they have to be really careful. I mean, how would they even know if they are a victim of something like this?
Well, that is one of the areas of concern that you wouldn't necessarily know. Yeah. I mean, it would take for the security services to use their sort of skills to deduce that. I don't think it's possible for an ordinary person to know when their messages have been compromised.
Yeah, I mean, that is the problem. And I mean, is this as a result of what's going on in Ukraine because it's now worse than ever? Or is it just something that has been going on for a while and we're just really finding out about it?
I think it's the kind of asymmetric or grey zone or hybrid warfare, lots of different terms for this new type of warfare that Russia has been using against the UK and Western nations for actually years now. Instead of the sort of traditional hot war that you're seeing in Ukraine, Russia's instead using all sorts of other levers, including technological, economical, diplomatic, to try and stir up problems, cause issues for countries that it considers hostile to its own objectives.
Mm. It really is quite an extraordinary thing. And MI6 obviously have got their hands full with China. I mean, for a long time it was thought that China was trying to get into the main sort of telephone network here using Huawei as a kind of, you know, sleeper cell, if you like. That seems to have been sort of put to bed. But, I mean, this is a constant problem now for any government in the West, isn't it?
I think that's right. There are, you know, huge problems that Western governments face when they're having to deal with technology that aren't owned by governments anymore. And I think there's even in recent, in the past year or so, been an acknowledgement by MI6 that it needs to do more to partner with the private sector because it can't make its own technology, the kind of tools it needs now, it can no longer make in-house with its own experts. So I think we might see more of government security services partnering with tech firms, employing or contracting their services. And it will need to do that to come up with the kind of safeguards, the firewalls, and other kind of tools to protect its own agents, politicians, and other kind of parts of civil society, because there is this recognition now that that's, you know, how people operate. It's very difficult to go about daily life, do business, without using these kind of apps and other tools that are so widespread.
Well, that's it. And I heard somebody explaining that this particular sort of spyware that was used has the ability to just send a message to a phone without you even acknowledging the message, even just deleting it. It can somehow access everything on that phone. So if whoever has hacked Liz Truss's phone has now got every one of her contacts, presumably, I don't know what you do about that. I mean, it's almost impossible to fight against, isn't it?
Yeah, and so I don't know the exact details of what has or hasn't been downloaded from Liz Truss's phone, but if that is the case, that these spyware viruses can download the contents, also photographs would be, a very dangerous cache of information for people to have. Might be compromising photos and so forth that would make the target a blackmail risk. So it
Yes.
is really worrying that if someone that's not in your contacts book, but who gets hold of your contact number, can send you a message, as you say, you don't even need to open it. The idea that that person could then steal the contents of your phone is pretty alarming.
Right. And I mean, I know you may not be able to answer this question, but I mean, can we assume that the MI6 operatives are doing exactly the same to Russia and China and making sure that we've got all their details as well?
Who knows? I think certainly the way that the British security services operate tends to be within a much tighter legal framework. Particularly when it comes to UK citizens, you need all sorts of warrants and to have a reasonable level of proof of wrongdoing or reasons for suspecting wrongdoing to be able to get the kind of warrant to do that kind of surveillance on British citizens. I think overseas as well, like it's probably guarded by a more legalistic framework.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. Good to talk to you, Lucy. Thank you very much indeed. Lucy Fisher there, Chief Political Commentator at Times Radio, telling us about the latest efforts by the Russians to somehow hack into Liz Truss's phone. Apparently, it's not very difficult to do. Let's go to Cornwall and talk to Jill. Hi, Jill.
Hi, Mike. How
Hey.
are you?
Yeah, all right. What's going on?
Well, it's this migrant thing. I'm so sick. I am sick of it. Absolutely sick of it. I mean, in any other situation, these people would be regarded as criminals.
Yeah.
They are. You talk to someone who's having to come through an airport
yeah
and filled in all the forms and done it correctly,
right
and they've had a situation where if they get turned around and stopped, then they are in effect sort of breaking the
yeah
law, and police can be called. And yet these people, we're picking them up, we're housing them, we're feeding them, we're giving them money. I'm sick of it.
I know.
I'm
Well, I mean, the thing
sick
is,
of
the first
having.
thing that happens to them, though, is they get arrested and they get taken to a detention centre. Well, shouldn't that be the end, right? And just build a proper detention centre, put them in it, and then they know that they don't leave it until
Well,
such
that's.
time. And if it takes 8 years for their asylum claim to be processed, then let them stay there for 8 years.
Well, that's their tough luck, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, if someone, the problem is, I think we should just turn the boats around, take them off of the boats they've come over, put them into a boat, and take them back and drop them onto the beach in France. Maybe if France got them back, they might help us sort it out.
Yes.
Might do something to stop the situation from happening so much from their beaches. But I mean, if someone broke into my house and turned around and said to me, "Look, I'm an asylum seeker," and I mean, would I be expected to look after him
Well, of
and
course
feed
not.
him? And
No.
well, no,
No, you'd be expected to
exactly.
call the police. You'd be expected to say you've got an illegal invader in your home and you'd like them to come and arrest them, please.
And that's why I'm fed up with these charities. I'm sorry, but I know charities do a lot of good, but I'm fed up with these people that are kept going by public money,
Yeah.
money donated by people who are probably struggling to pay their bills,
Exactly.
struggling to feed the kids and what have you. And they are devoting their time in order to make us feel as if we're the wrong ones in the country. We're the not nice people.
Yes.
I'm
I mean, people are
I'm
just
really
listen,
cross.
Jill, you speak for the nation. People are at their wits' end. Absolutely unbelievable what's going on. Jill's in Cornwall. She makes an awful lot of sense. You know she makes sense. You know it makes sense. The only thing that doesn't make sense is the actual reality of what's going on. Makes no sense at all. 0344 499 1000. We'll take more of your calls after this.
Mike Graham.
Fighting the good fight with all his might. Providing a welcome dose of common sense for the common people.
Solid talk.
Hot talk.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
Nationwide. By your side. Talk radio and talk TV.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham, right here on Talk TV. We are, of course, at the start of yet another week, almost at the end of October. In fact, it's Halloween. I haven't mentioned that it's Halloween. I should mention that it's Halloween. A day that didn't used to be celebrated in England at all. It was purely and simply a Scottish event, and a Northern Irish event, and an American event. But it is now, of course, an English event as well. So I was actually driving in London yesterday as I was coming back from being away for the weekend. I saw five dinosaurs crossing the street in front of me. I can only assume they were dressed up for Halloween. I don't know. Or perhaps they were members of the Labour Party. Very possibly. Anyway, Peter Hitchens is here. We're going to talk to him about many things, including the migrant crisis, including Just Stop Oil, and also including the big story of the weekend, the clocks going back. Because you might remember we had a fascinating conversation, I think it was this time last year, about why Peter doesn't think we should change the clocks in this country at all. 0344 499 1000. Keep those calls coming in. I've got this from Thomas. Foller, sorry. Hi, Mike. I live in the Netherlands. The same problems with migrants here as well. They've now decided to house them in an unused cruise ship. Also, not enough houses for residents as they prioritise immigrants. And there is a lot of unrest. It is a big problem, and it's going to get a bigger problem here as well as we go forward. But let's say very good morning to Peter Hitchens. How are
morning.
You?
Morning.
How's it going?
Well, it's nice to be back on genuine, honest time instead of Berlin time. That
yes.
We've been forced to
well, we
months.
Had a fascinating argument about, not argument, conversation about this. I think it was this, must have been this time last year, I suppose.
I think it does tend to come up.
And which Chris Evans became very, very fascinated by because he couldn't believe how complex this whole thing was.
And nobody understands
and,
it.
And your explanation of how we got there. So without rehearsing all of it again, the bottom line is you wrote in your column this week, on Sunday, that as you wake up this morning to this, you should be feeling better.
You should.
The circadian rhythm of sort of what is called Greenwich Mean Time.
There is actually serious medical research which shows that when the clocks go the other way, when they push them forwards to be dishonest in March, then quite large numbers of people fall ill. It creates or is associated with the creation of heart arrhythmia, which can lead to strokes. And this isn't just made up stuff. This is real research.
But what's the reasoning behind that?
Well, it's the same as jet lag. If you know perfectly well, you move out of the time zone to which you are accustomed, you feel tired and stressed in abnormal ways. What you do when you move the clocks forward away from where they ought to be is to create a sort of miniature jet lag, but without the fun.
Yes, I must confess, I woke up this morning and felt good about the fact that it was lighter.
Yes,
one thing I don't like is waking up in the dark.
Well, that is the main difference. If you move the clocks forwards at any time, what you mean you get more light in the evening and less light in the morning. The amount of daylight remains the same, but because we're all governed by things like broadcasting schedules, school opening times, work opening times, and the whole way in which life is arranged, the clocks, even if we pay no attention to them, they have a huge effect on how we live, and it's particularly if you commute long distance or have children to get to school. It's as if one morning you got a letter from your school's head saying, as of next Monday, we require you to bring your child to school 1 hour earlier. And a letter from your employer at the same time, as of next Monday, we require you to attend work 1 hour earlier. And all the broadcasting begins 1 hour earlier. That's basically what happens when you fiddle with the clocks. But people don't understand this. I only understand it because I once flew backwards across the international dateline. And the experience was so fascinating that I fell to thinking about it.
What was that? Tell us more about
it. When I left the Soviet Union after 2.5 years, I decided I had to do it in some way that was not ordinary. So I managed to get permission to go. I wanted to walk across to Bering Strait because it does freeze.
Yeah.
They wouldn't do that because there's too much electronic stuff there, surveillance. Right. But they would allow me to go to a place called Providenia, which is the last place in Siberia. And to fly from there, I flew from Providenia to Nome in Alaska. I left Providenia in Russia late on Monday morning, and I arrived in Nome, Alaska at lunchtime the previous Sunday. And so I gained an entire day, which I'm keeping. And it's an extraordinary thing. And once you look into this, you begin to realize
I once put the proposition to somebody that if you had been able to still fly on Concorde, if you continually flied west on Concorde, and I don't even know whether you would continue to call it west, depending on how you go around the globe, but I guess you would, from London, fly west. If you continue to fly, stopping only for short trips to take a photograph or something, New York, California, because you're effectively flying quicker than any other method of flight, could you, because you would fly to New York, you would leave here, I think, at, say, 9 o'clock in the morning, and it was only a 3-hour flight, so you would get there local time before you left.
I mean, the time I did take Concorde, which was very early in its existence, when you could only fly to Washington, D.C., I think we did arrive more or less exactly the time we'd left.
Yes.
So we'd basically the time spent flying was cancelled out on the way back, flying eastwards. It was an extraordinarily accelerated evening, which I found very disconcerting.
Yes,
and actually made me feel quite strange.
Yes.
You left in the early afternoon. Suddenly it was absolutely dark night.
Right.
Not long after leaving the American coast.
Right.
Very strange experience.
That would be weird.
It does mess with the time.
Yeah, but going the other way, if there were no delays and you say it took three hours, if you left London at 9 a.m.
yeah.
You would which is only 4 a.m. in Washington D.C.
Yeah.
You would arrive in Washington D.C. around 7 a.m. So effectively.
Yeah, I think it took slightly longer than
three and a half, but you still get there.
Yeah, no,
before you left.
It was odd. It was definitely.
So, my theory being, if you continued all the way round and came back to London having gone that way, what would happen?
Well, then you have to fling in the international date line, of course,
because
you would then fly forwards across the international date line if you were going that way.
Right.
I was going east.
Yes.
So that's how I went backwards. If you went the
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The other way, you'd lose an entire day.
And is that all invented time then?
Longitude is an invented measure of a real thing.
Right.
There are 360 degrees that could equally well, if they measure the degree in a different way, be 5,000 degrees, but there are in fact 360.
Yes.
And 15 of those cover an hour of the 24 it takes the Earth to rotate. The basic thing you can't alter is the time it takes for the Earth to rotate.
Yes.
It's just an attempt to measure it. The lines of longitude, unlike latitude, are completely arbitrary.
Mm.
The fact that the zero meridian runs through Greenwich is a matter of political power.
Yeah.
We made it so. The
yes.
French hated it.
Right.
And they spent...
Why didn't they have their own?
Well, they tried to have their own, but they had a very curious designation of Greenwich Mean Time as Paris time plus 19
right.
minutes or something. But they wouldn't accept it. And in the end, after 100 years of bitter diplomacy, they caused Greenwich Mean Time to stop being called Greenwich Mean Time and to be called Universal Coordinated Time, which is now its official name. They hate it.
Is it really? See, yeah, I've never called it.
No, it isn't Greenwich Mean Time anymore.
So, but it's still.
I mean, so much of this stuff.
No,
this is
what I love talking to you about it for, because I still see GMT written down.
Only here. No. Nowhere else in the world.
Okay.
I think you also explained. UCC.
Did you not also explain their mad plan to have a sort of metric system?
Oh,
time?
They did. They tried to have the French revolutionaries tried to have 10-hour days and 10-day weeks.
Right.
Though they did have 12 months. They couldn't, I think, work out how to do it in 10 months. And the problem with 10-day weeks is, of course, the weekend comes around less frequently, and that is very unpopular.
Yes.
So
particularly now, with the work-life balance.
Revolted again. But apparently, if you look in very high-class antique shops in Paris, you can sometimes find the beautiful old 18th-century clocks with the 10-hour
That's amazing.
Day marked on them.
Because you also wrote about a dozen this weekend.
Oh, the dozen, yeah.
And how the dozen has kind of disappeared.
Well, I just noticed that going around a particular supermarket.
I love this stuff.
They were selling eggs in tens, which is what they do on the continent.
Right.
But here we tend to buy them by the half dozen. Or occasionally. I haven't seen a dozen eggs.
Well, you wouldn't buy five, would you?
Well, I wouldn't.
I mean, how would you make a box for five eggs?
Well, it would be odd.
It'd have to be long
single. Well, that's why it's ten, isn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, that's why it's six, presumably, because it's an even number.
Well, I suppose so. But when eggs were originally sold in dozens, they were in half dozens, they were sold in bags.
Yeah. I mean, when I was a young man, I don't think you could buy a dozen eggs. I mean, that was rather large extravagance. You just bought six.
Yeah, but it is a different measure. And yeah. But all kinds of things were still then done in 12 pence to a shilling.
Yeah.
And 12 inches to a foot, which have now more or less faded from the minds of millions of people. But to me, because 12 is actually a rather good base of calculation.
I meet people now who don't know what a foot is.
Yeah.
Or a yard.
Well, it's 30 centimetres, isn't it? Which is, oddly enough, the length of the rulers in continental schools.
But and yet we still use...
They still have a foot, but they don't...
Don't know what they do in Europe, to be fair, but in terms of a football penalty area, it's 18 yards. It's the 18-yard box.
I don't know what they do.
I don't know what they call it in Europe. I've never thought about that. But if you go to the Bernabeu, for example, to watch Real Madrid, do they have an 18-yard area?
You'd have to check. What I do know is that somebody once was asked to mark out a cricket pitch and he thought the 22 metres would be the same as 22 yards. And so he marked it out in metres instead of yards. And the result, the effect on play, was appalling.
Yeah.
It just didn't work.
Right.
The difference was considerable. So, yes. But I imagine they have a metric version of it.
Yes. It is fascinating, though, because, I mean, we are governed so much by time because we never have enough of it, for a start.
Yeah.
You always need more of it. But what would actually be the case if they didn't change the clocks, right? What would happen?
Well, it depends, in the spring.
Well, in the spring.
When they didn't change them.
Well, if they kept them as they are now, and they got round to whenever they would normally move the clocks forward.
And left them as they are.
What would be the effect of that?
Everybody would be much happier. There would be a lot of people who wouldn't get ill in
But practically, how would we know?
Practically, you wouldn't know particularly because there isn't a fixed amount of daylight. You can't also the amount of daylight by changing the clocks. It's a fantasy. It's a phrase, daylight saving time, is ridiculous because you can't change the amount of daylight. It just means it's actually, in general, if you leave it where it is, the evenings come slightly earlier and the mornings... Mm.
The summertime come slightly earlier. But in the summertime, you've got more light anyway.
But if you're used to it, but until, I think, 19... Is it 15 or 16? Until the middle of the First World War, that was normal anyway. There are jokes about this in P.G. Woodhouse novels of how the changing of the clocks during and after the First World War messes about with time.
Yeah.
And it does. It basically means the evening comes earlier than... I mean, we've all had the clocks put forward, bizarrely, in summer. For pretty much a century now, so people are used to it.
Right. It stays light longer.
It would be dark a little earlier.
Yes, which wouldn't matter much in the summer.
People always say that if the clocks are kept forward and it's lighter later in the evening, everyone will go out and do open air Shakespeare and play tennis. But what everybody will do is the same as they always do: slump in front of the television, go to the pub, and it won't make any difference at all. It's a fantasy. And all the claims of what it will do, it will save so much energy and all the rest of it, they're all couched in that with that wonderful verb could, or its friend may, which equally well means could, not,
could not,
or may not. And there's no actual proof that it's ever done the slightest good at all. But it's an obsession with the sort of people who like to fiddle with our lives.
Yes.
But it's fundamental. It's as if to get people to drive more slowly, the speedometer of every car was made to read 40 miles an hour when the car was actually doing 30.
Mm.
It's a fantasy to imagine that by fiddling around with the measures of things, you alter reality.
Well, I mean, governments have worked like that for quite a long time, unfortunately, but we'll come back to that.
Yeah.
Peter Hitchens is here. We're going to talk about the migrant crisis, what he would do to solve it. We'll take loads of your calls coming up as well. 0344 499 1000. This is Talk TV.
Clear-headed, honest opinion.
Lively debate.
Talk Radio. Online, on DAB+, Talk Radio and Talk TV.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk TV. I'm reliably informed that it's just called the penalty box, which doesn't sound very European to me. Terry in Ramsbottom, I think, is having a laugh. He says, European football fields have a 15.459-metre box. It must be 18 yards then, by the sounds of it.
Well, it sounds about right, but I mean, I would have to get a calculator and work it out. But presumably they have some expression.
Somebody's also asking, isn't December the 10th month?
Well, it was in the Roman calendar,
yes.
And then they banged in a couple of extra ones.
Yeah, so It's fascinating stuff. Let's talk about the big story of the day and probably the week, I dare say, because we've been talking about it for a long time here on this station. But the illegal migrant problem, where they had, I think, 1,900 came this weekend alone, which would suggest if the if that continues, that's just 2,000 every weekend until Christmas. Is another.
Well, the weather will worsen, I think.
It will, but
which makes a big difference. But it, nonetheless, I mean, I went down.
Well, it may not. It's very clement at the moment, isn't it?
But I think the forecast is for quite rough weather in the Channel.
Yeah.
But the thing is that I went down there to take a look. And in fact, the day I was there, there was a crosswind and there was nobody landing. Mm. But it was quite obvious from all the stories that everybody told me that the Channel used to be a psychological barrier. People thought this was a dangerous stretch of sea, which of course it is.
It is, supposedly.
Traffic, but they didn't dare cross it. But now that's gone. People think that it's crossable, and so they cross it. So what's happened is we effectively have a land border with France in, to all intents and purposes. So the key to anything that we do is France. If we can get the French to prevent people from actually getting onto the water, then we've solved that particular problem.
Yes.
And I think that no effort should be spared in doing so. I'm actually quite an admirer of France. I think it's, in some ways, a very well and sensibly governed country. It certainly has a very powerful state when it chooses to use it. And if the French state could be recruited to do so, obviously that's going to involve money, because it's not particularly to their benefit. Though I think in the long
run... Well, we've tried giving them money.
We haven't ever done it enough. It's never been properly applied. And you have silly people in British government who make daft remarks about, is France really our friend and stuff like that, which sets back. And of course the quibbles about the European Union issue. But I think if a British Prime Minister, I think this has to go, Prime Minister, President, went to President Macron and asked him to take the matter really seriously on the basis of, and we'd have to spend a lot.
Yeah.
Because basically the French are not going to want British police or British soldiers patrolling their coast. They're probably keener on national sovereignty than anybody else in the world. They're not going to. It has to be them doing it.
Yes.
So we have to pay them. I think it's worth it. I would cancel HS2 tonight to spend the money on persuading France to patrol the Channel.
There's a lot of reasons for cancelling HS2.
I mean, reasons.
I don't know how far along they are, but what I do know is they're very far along the route of purchasing properties. And
they're far along the very difficult contracts, which are hard to get out of, but I don't care. I think it was always a mistake, and in any case, I think the money would be better spent on this purpose.
Yes.
And I think it could be done, but it needs resolve, and it needs an intelligent, grown-up attitude towards France, to which they would, in my view, respond.
Yes.
And
although it would
stop. If they can stop it if they want to. The moment, they don't much care.
Well, there's no question, I think, that the problem is not so much what you do with people when they get here, it's stopping them
coming.
Once
they're here, that's it.
Once they're here, they never leave.
You might get 1% of them to leave after they arrive, if you're very, very lucky. But in the meantime,
now apparently have got worked out that even if they are deported, kicked out, they come back again.
Well, very possibly.
And that way they can reapply.
I mean, international law makes it incredibly difficult to expel people once they've arrived from any country, if they claim that they are seeking refuge, and it's very hard to prove that they're not, and frankly, in many cases, beyond us to do so.
Because also the rules...
These are the ones who are actually in the centres. Mm. There's very large numbers who, I think, from what I saw of the way that the coast is there, who simply come ashore and are met by Confederates and disappear without trace, and so we have no record of them. I think the numbers coming across are probably significantly larger than the ones that are reported.
They are. I mean, what people say in the immigration business is that there was a time when more people came on lorries because they could smuggle them away into Britain that way, but that's been pretty much curtailed, and it's much more difficult now to
do. It is difficult.
So more of them have come by boat, course, because it's easy.
Of course, horrible things happen, but we have to understand this. I have no criticisms of the people for trying to get into the country.
No, I don't.
I think,
because why wouldn't
enterprising,
you?
Here it is.
Yeah.
I think that there's a much deeper problem in Britain, which we don't ever address, which is why is it that that quite a lot of people in this country welcome migration? It's because there are a lot of jobs which ought to be done by Indigenous people, but the Indigenous people, I believe, thanks to an education system which is one of the worst in the advanced world, and also the general breakup of the family, that an awful lot of British people are not willing to work in the kind of jobs which immigrants will do. Mm. And I think that's that is an absurdity which ought to be corrected.
My son has got a job.
We need to rebuild the schools, and we need to rebuild family life.
My son has got a job in a well-known pizza place, shall we say. Everybody else working there is foreign.
everyone.
Oh, this is quite cool. Right? Yeah.
And that's the thing. How about this from Mr. W? Back in the 70s, I was a radio operator in the Royal Navy. All signals were sent with a time of 4 digits, followed by a Z, Zulu, this being what was GMT, now UCT. Local time was different outside of home waters, so we had 2 clocks, one for each.
Yeah, that's so right. Zulu is generally the military term for what we call Greenwich and everybody else. Right. UCT, yeah.
Mm. One final thing to talk about was your main piece this week about yet another terrible, grisly, awful murder.
Yes, it was so distressing. I mean, these were people who'd reached the ends of their lives. They were in their 80s. And, yeah. and she let the cat out, and in through the door came this monster who then appears to have spent the entire night torturing these two old people to try and get them to tell him where the money was. I don't know. It was blamed partly on his gambling habit, something which is now called an addiction, which I've no doubt he gambled heavily and got himself into great debts. I asked the local police whether they'd investigated his drug use.
Yeah.
They said they had, and it turned up nothing, which is better than most police forces in this. They will refuse to discuss it, because I think most police forces are embarrassed by the fact they do nothing to prevent drug abuse. And they have a suspicion that it may be behind crimes of this guy. So I can't say whether this guy was in fact deranged by drugs, but an awful lot of crimes of this kind, and I draw attention to the website Attack of Smoke Cannabis, where these things are monitored.
Yeah.
All local papers are monitored, and he lists, Mr. Granger, who runs it, lists every crime where marijuana is an element. It's very, very common, so I think it might well be. I just think these people, the world they grew up in, was simply not one in which people would come into your house and torture you to death. And that changed. These are people who grew up in the 40s. That change in our life is huge, and I think it's time it was reversed.
Absolutely right. Well, we've got a police chief today. We're going to talk about it next. After you go, who's now saying, actually, you know, we're safer now than we were 20 years ago. The reason that it looks as though crime is going up is because we're recording more crime. And you go, well, that's not actually the reason. It is more dangerous now than it was 20 years ago. I'm sure of that.
Do you remember the terrible case? I'm struggling to remember the names of the people involved. One was called Francesca, where a woman and her slightly disabled, I think, daughter... died. She burnt them both to death in their car because they'd been they'd been more or less driven mad by persecution by neighbours because of the girl's disability. And this is the problem. How do you record what was happening to those people? What is it? And this is the kind of thing which the police can easily say, well, that's not a crime, but actually many, many people's lives are made to complete misery by harassment of this kind. And they do go almost mad. Of course, the other great scourge of noise and of people hanging around the street outside and vandalising people's cars and possessions and wrecking their front gardens. This is not... It's dismissed as petty so often by the police and by the authorities. It's not petty when it happens to you, particularly if you're old and defenceless. And you call the police and they come once and they do nothing.
And they say, we can't do anything.
We can do nothing. And there you are left there standing in the twilight. And you are thinking, I have absolutely nobody who's going to defend me from this. I am on my own.
Yeah.
What does that do to people?
I know.
It is a crime. And police should realise that their presence on the street, I keep saying this is the most basic thing, their presence on the street, on foot, regular on foot patrol, transforms millions of lives for the better and makes life much harder for criminals and lowlifes. And they should go back to doing it as their principal occupation. Better idea. And if they won't do it, as I say, close down these police forces and replace them with new ones, which will.
Absolutely. Peter, thank you very much. It was Fiona and Pilkington who was involved in that case.
Right.
Peter, thanks very much indeed. We'll look forward to seeing you again at the same time next week. This is Talk TV.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk TV. Much to do. Plenty of time to do it in, of course. Ian Collins will be up at 1 o'clock. 03444991000 is the number. Vanessa Feltz is back at 4. It's Jeremy Carl, of course. We'll be talking to him coming up in the next hour from 7. Piers Morgan back at 8. I'll be back at the talk from 9 o'clock tonight as well. So there's lots going on, lots to do. We need to hear from you, of course, as well. 0344 499 1000. Here's one from somebody who says it was a lack of action by the police. I've lost that one now. But we're talking about Tony Martin. Lack of action by the police, here we go, that led to Tony Martin taking action against burglars who repeatedly invaded his home, says Terry in Ramsbottom. Well, that's right. What we have today is a police chief who's basically saying, look, the problem here is not that we've not got crime that we're not dealing with. It's not that crime is going up. It's that we are recording incidents which are not really recordable. We shouldn't be recording these incidents because it makes it look as if we're solving fewer crimes than ever. Well, surely that's not the point. There's no question in anybody's mind that criminal convictions and criminal charges being brought is a thing of the past. Let's talk to Peter Blexley, former Metropolitan Police detective. Peter, very good morning to you.
And to you, Mike.
I've never quite heard anything like this. I mean, I've heard of sort of PR spin, but to say that one of the reasons why it looks as though crime isn't being solved at the rate that it used to be is because different crimes are being recorded and therefore that's somehow skewing the figures. Seems mad, doesn't it?
Well, here we have Sir David Thompson, Chief Constable of West Midlands Police, who is heading for the retirement door in about a month or so, and has suddenly found his voice. And he's decided to say that part of the problem as to why the public feel so uncomfortable and so fearful of crime is because police are reporting matters as violence when, in fact, they're not actually matters of violence.
Right.
Now, of course, there's a huge problem with reporting of crime anyway, because you have the PCR, police crime reporting stats, and then you have the crime survey of England and Wales, and they often sell very different things. And we all know that statistics can be manipulated by anybody in whatever way, generally speaking. So what essentially Thompson is saying here is the police have got to stop reporting things. For example, if a child picks up a potato peeler and points it towards their parent, is that a crime of violence? Should that be recorded? And many other examples right. used.
Well, who's reported that particular crime? Surely not the parents.
Well, I don't know. He uses that as an example where he's saying that it shouldn't be reported as a crime. Now, of course, if the child was 9 years old, they'd be below the age of criminal responsibility. Yeah. It shouldn't be a crime. If it's a big strapping 16-year-old who might have misbehaved in the past, and has got a potato peeler and is threatening a parent, I would say that very much would need to be a crime to be recorded.
Well, I suppose so. But, I mean, these things seems to me this is about common sense as ever, isn't it, Peter? It's about sort of using your brain and going, well, that's clearly not a crime. For example, he says things like verbal arguments between neighbours and people's fear of violence were being recorded as criminal acts. Well, I mean, if there's a verbal argument between neighbours, surely that would depend on what the verbal argument was. I mean, the verbal argument is between two people who live next door to each other and one of them threatens to kill the other one, then that's probably a crime. But if they're just having a row and one of them insults the wife's hairdo, that's probably not a crime.
Threats to kill is very much a crime, of course. An example that's used in this article today in the Times newspaper is when a neighbour raises a walking stick during an argument. Now, right. is that a threatening act, for example? Should that be recorded as a crime? Well, I think if that stick is raised and the person who's on the other side of the argument feels that that stick might be brought down upon their head at any moment, yes, I would say that is a crime. Mm. But here we have it, okay? The complexities and the mixed thinking and the confusion which is polluting so much of our policing.
Exactly right. You know, and Peter Hitchens
has got himself in such a pickle.
Yeah, well, Peter Hitchens was here just a moment ago talking about that terrible case of the Pilkington family, where they'd been abused for so long by their neighbours, but the police hadn't really done anything about it. And surely it's obvious that not every, you know, dispute between neighbours is worthy of police investigation, but they ought to be able to pick out the ones that are going to spiral out of control.
You'd like to think that experienced police officers might have that kind of copper's feeling as to is this going to be something that will escalate, or did the police turning up, having a few stern words with the parties involved, appear to nip the problem in the bud?
Mm.
Policing has got itself into such a confused state that I'm going to make no apology for saying what I think we need, because policing is an industry now. You've got departments of policing in universities, you've got the National Police Chiefs Council, you've got the College of Police, please, listeners and viewers, stay with me. I'm trying to illustrate a point here. You've got 43 different police forces in England and Wales. So much conflicting, confusing actions and directions going on. We truly need a royal commission into policing, because we haven't had one since the early 1960s. And quite frankly, with so much of policing being in the state of confusion that it is, we are all being shortchanged.
Yeah, absolutely right. And I'm also not buying his assertion that the streets of Britain are safer now than they were 20 years ago, because that is absolutely not true.
Well, I've been reading an article this morning from the Office of National Statistics, who last week published the results of the most recent England and Wales crime study. And I kid you not, the general tone of that article was that we are all heading towards the sunny uplands of a crime-free nirvana,
yeah,
where we'll be able to leave our front doors open and walk down the streets in blissful kind of whatever state of mind we might be in. Frankly, when we look up the cases we're hearing about, when we rely on anecdotal evidence, which I get every time I meet people, and people know what I do, they're telling me about how they or a family member recently became a victim of crime.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. And I get that every single day here. People who, I mean, my favourite one that I'm quoting at the moment is a woman who rang up and told me that she got burgled. She reported it to the police at 7:30 on a Friday night. At 10:30 on Friday night, same night, she got a call from the police saying they'd closed the case. That was it. They didn't bother coming round. They didn't ask her any questions. They'd literally just closed the case. And what we know is that now, from something like just 7 years ago, 20% of crimes were being solved. It's now down to 0.5%. An incredible low number.
Yeah, absolutely. But some people will have us believe that crime, certain crimes, are decreasing and are less prevalent than they were. But if you look at the overall picture, we've got so many people now that simply don't report when they are a victim of crime,
right,
because they think nothing is going to happen. The police won't do anything. It's utterly pointless. So I will not report the fact that my car got keyed last night, or it got broken into,
right,
or it got daubed with graffiti, etc., etc., etc. So I quite frankly don't trust many of these crime statistics at all. I prefer to rely upon the evidence that I hear when I'm talking to people, and I meet people on a daily basis, and that paints a pretty gloomy picture where people live in fear of becoming victims of crime.
Absolutely right. That's exactly what I would have said. Peter, thank you very much indeed. Peter Blexley, former Metropolitan Police detective there. People are much more fearful of crime. There is more crime on the streets. This ridiculous notion that somehow we're living in a safer environment than we were 20 years ago is simply wrong, and it shouldn't be being spread about by a police chief, should it? 0344 499 1000. I'd say bring us your stories of your dealings with the police. And if you want to, please do that. But we're so overwhelmed at the moment with calls. We'll certainly get to them. We will get to them. Coming up next, we're going to have something new for you. It's called the Daily Biden.
Edgy talk, plain talk, unrivaled talk. Mike Graham, the only radio show you can count on for a proper serving of good old-fashioned common sense. In search of the perfect debate.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
Nationwide, by your side, Talk Radio and Talk TV.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham, right here on Talk TV. The vitriolic left are still at it, trying to link my picture of my little bonfire in the garden to some ludicrous attack on a detention centre down in Dover. It really is quite extraordinary. Somebody's actually now reporting me to the Metropolitan Police. Brilliant. I mean, don't you think that that is actually a waste of police time, when I'm clearly showing you a picture of something that's going on in my garden on a Sunday afternoon when me and my son were actually clearing out some spaces in the shed? I mean, it really does beg a belief how weird some people are. The left want me to be a horrible bigot. They would like me to be a racist. They would want me to be unpopular. But unfortunately, I am popular because people understand that I talk an awful lot of sense. Everybody knows that I'm not a racist. Everybody knows that I'm a very, very commonsensical individual. And quite frankly, to say that the asylum system in this country is working, you'd have to be an idiot. To say that the Home Office is working, you'd have to be absolutely and utterly moronic. If you actually think that any part of our immigration policy is good, then you are a complete and utter out-of-touch wally. The bottom line for me is that the Home Office needs fixing. The immigration system needs fixing. The border force needs fixing. We have had 40,000 people come here illegally this year alone. 1,900 yesterday. We've got Manston, overwhelmingly overcrowded with too many people because it's not big enough to deal with all of the numbers of people coming to a detention centre in Dover, which was designed for a few hundred. If you can't see the sense of what I'm saying, then maybe you're listening to the wrong words. Maybe you're listening to the wrong message. Maybe you're imagining a message that is not being said, because my message to all of you is that this has to stop, because the violence that happened at the weekend will probably get worse. And we know that there is violence both inside that detention centre as well as the violence that happened yesterday outside of it. And the government now has to be seen not just to say they're going to do something about it, but to actually do something about it. Let's talk to Alp Mehmet, who's chairman of Migration Watch UK, an expert in these matters, somebody who's been looking at the migration numbers for many, many years, and somebody I've been talking to for a great many years about it as well. Alp, a very good afternoon to you. Welcome.
Good afternoon to you, Mike.
It's obvious now that we have reached a massive new kind of level of failure in this system. You know, we've got overcrowding at Manston. We've got hotels now used not just for block booking of migrants, but also now for the booking of some floors where they will share space with people who have paid to be there. I mean, it's absolutely incredible what's going on, isn't it?
Yeah, I agree. I agree entirely. I mean, one thing that I've been slightly taken aback over is the fact that this all seems to be blamed on Suella Braverman, and
yeah,
that somehow this is all her fault. And I'm as I say, I'm a bit confused about that. I can understand why a politician, why the opposition will look for an opportunity to be critical of the government, but we mustn't lose sight of what has happened. We're, I think, something like 78 short of 40,000 so far this year. We've had nearly 7,000 this month. It's the speed and the scale of what's going on that is the problem. It was always going to be inevitable, frankly, that the facilities being provided were inadequate. Now, it takes time, I know, and I'm sure that the government is actually going to do its level best to address the problems. But to lose sight, to forget why this is all happening, I think is part of the problem, frankly.
It really is, because you've got a border force basically that doesn't know what to do about all of these numbers coming in. The numbers clearly are increasing exponentially with every week that goes by. You know, I'm not even sure that the numbers will go down much between now and Christmas, because the weather might not ever be that bad, and it doesn't seem always to stop them anyway.
No, I don't think for one second that the numbers will go down. If anything, they will go up. And all this debate about providing the right facilities on arrival, when people get here, all that does is, frankly, encourage the traffickers to ply their evil trade. Now, I really strongly believe that this problem has to be tackled at source. The EU has clearly lost control of all those coming into its own territory. There were 640,000 asylum applications last year. Mm. There's something like, well, when I last looked at it in May, there were something like 240,000 irregular entrants, illegal entrants. It's probably well over 300,000 now. The EU is today or yesterday signed a deal with Egypt, precisely because of the problem that we're now facing on the channel. So I think that part of the solution, of course, has to be working with the EU and working with the French, and that really is to be welcomed.
Yeah, absolutely right. On Migration Watch's Twitter, I noticed that you've got a fact check there, and it says, "We have plenty of routes for genuine refugees and those in need. Don't be misled by the twisted distortions of the Open Borders Brigade." Now, I retweeted that. Tell us a bit more about what those routes are and how they could come in a different and possibly more legal way.
Well, it's not a case of coming in more legal ways, but the fact is that we're already dealing with hundreds of thousands of people who are coming here. Now, you could argue that coming from Hong Kong or coming from Ukraine is different circumstances, maybe. But nevertheless, these are people who want refuge, who are seeking refuge, and we're providing it. There are Afghans coming over here. There have been Syrians. There were Iraqis. There are any number of regular routes. And one thing that we have learned in bringing people over is that you've got to have the accommodation.
Yeah.
The Scots, not so long ago, had to put a hold on their scheme for Ukrainians because they didn't have the housing. Mm. And this is really part of the problem with regard to placing those who are coming here at will. They're arriving here with very little check, either from where they set off in France or indeed after they get to us.
Well, that's right. And every country in Europe is dealing with this in various different ways, right? Denmark was able to repatriate a load of people. I think they paid them, actually, to go back to Syria. You've got Sweden basically deporting people who they consider to be illegal migrants. You've got Turkey allowing many people who are coming there from Syria to sit on a border because they won't let them in. You know, there's all sorts of different aspects going on around Europe, right, and various parts of it. Everybody seems to be doing it better than we are.
Well, I'm not sure that they are, to be honest. I think that the EU's mess, which is largely of their own making, is even bigger than ours. But that aside, but you mentioned Turkey. Mm. There are millions of asylum seekers, of refugees in Turkey that the EU is paying for. So the EU is not above making arrangements to keep people away from their borders and away from their territory. I think that this problem has to be tackled collectively. We have to do it together. We're internationally, deal with it internationally. And then perhaps we would start to make sure that people are not setting off in the first place.
No, quite. We'll come back to that in a moment. I've just got handed a piece of paper here from the Press Association. Suella Braverman has said that between September the 6th and October the 19th, she had sent official documents from her government email to her personal address on six occasions. She said that that was on occasions when she was conducting meetings virtually or related to public lines to take in interviews. None of the documents in question concern national security, intelligence agency or cybersecurity matters and did not pose any risk to national security. None of the documents were classified as secret or top secret. It seems to me that there is, as you might expect, Alp, a kind of a groundswell of media opinion that Suella Braverman should be sort of, you know, harassed and chased out of office as a result of what she's already resigned for once before. What do you make of that statement? I mean, if it didn't pose a risk to national security and if none of the documents were classified as secret or top secret, what's the big deal?
Well, maybe it has something to do with what Suella Braverman said at the party conference when she said she's not only concerned and will deal with the channel crisis, but she also says that she's going to tackle the out-of-control legal migration that is going on. Now, I suspect that there are those who are displeased, to say the least, because it affects them if the sort of uncontrolled, cheaper, lower-skilled immigration is denied them. And that has something to do with it. With the opposition, the Labour Party, frankly, any opposition worth its salt would attack the government. But it also, I believe, has something to do with the fact that what Suella Braverman was saying at her party conference actually appealed to a lot of people in and around the country. And that has more to do with the fact that Yvette Cooper, who is a decent person, but frankly, she and her party have absolutely no answer and certainly no policies that would tackle this. And that's why they're avoiding the ball. they're going for the player.
Well, that's it. And I mean, you echoed Natalie Elphick's sentiments yesterday when she said that there is this sort of cabal of left-wing lawyers, of charities, of, you know, people who seem to think that Britain should have an open door policy to anyone who wants to come here.
There are those who think that that is the right thing to do, undoubtedly. It just so happens that the vast majority of people in this country don't believe that, don't want that. If democracy is worth anything, surely it's worth listening to what the voters want and what it is that they're pressing for, rather than what the sort of people that you've just described, Mike, think is necessary or is the right thing to do.
Well, exactly. And just to go back for a second to those Syrian refugees in Turkey, there's supposedly thousands of them assembling effectively on the Greek border so that they can get into the European Union, they can enter the EU, and from whence they can go presumably wherever they like, thanks to Schengen. But the EU are trying to stop them coming.
The EU is trying to stop them coming. And in fact, there have been reported cases where they've actually been turned back sort of mid-flow as they before they reach the boats reach EU territory, before they reach Greece, they have been turned back. Italians did something similar. So it's not as if other countries are not above pushing back the boats. I'm not suggesting, by the way, I know a lot of people say, let's turn the boats back. The channel, frankly, I just don't see that it's practical without risking a lot of lives. And that's something that I think we won't do. We won't turn boats back simply because it means that there is every likelihood that people will die as a result of our doing that.
Well, I think so. And that's exactly the point. You know, I think that turning them back or doing something once they've arrived here is not the solution. The solution surely is to stop them coming in the first place. Alp, thanks very much indeed. Alp Mehmet, Chairman of Migration Watch UK. Coming up, we're going to be talking Halloween, because, of course, it is Halloween, and whatever you're doing out there, it won't be as weird as what's going on down in Somerset. We've got a story for you which will curdle the milk in your coffee. This is Talk TV.
Talk radio across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday, on Talk Radio via DAB, online, or via the Talk Radio app. And if you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us on 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.